I'm talking about the entire world, unless you have another green carrier of energy. Right now, all we have is electricity, and we're trying to, you know, basically negotiate, you know, two unparalleled challenges simultaneously, developing the undeveloped world, or yes, is one, and that's 85% of the world is going to need a whole lot of infrastructure. I mean, you're talking trillions and trillions of dollars of infrastructure just to develop that world. At the same time, I mean, we've been running on fossil fuels, basically coal, natural gas, and oil, for more than a century, and they're, yep, they're fabulous fuels. I mean, they're dense, they hold a lot of energy, and they certainly have, you know, generated, no pun intended, you know, a fabulous period of growth for, you know, at least the developed world.
Yeah.
And now we've got to, you know, basically figure out how to find other sources of energy that are, you know, not polluting, because I think at this point, though I've always been something of a skeptic, I think it's pretty clear that we're probably going to get some form of climate change, and it's going to make things, you know, really rough. And it, you know, look, it makes all the sense in the world basically because of scarcities. Even if we didn't have this climate problem hovering over us,
yeah,
we'd still have to get into a renewable scenario. I mean, you know, if you're going to, you know, civilization is going to, you know, continue, you know, it's not going to continue on a fixed amount of oil or natural gas or coal. It needs something that's renewable. And you've got to get into a cycle. You've got to create a cycle that in which, you know, energy can create energy. Green energy can create green energy. You know, that would be the ideal cycle. Right now, oil can't create oil. Once oil's used, it's gone.
Yeah.
But electricity can create other electricity if we put together the pieces correctly. And one missing piece right now is hydrogen. I mean, you know, we basically, all we've done is the electric vehicle. That's great. But I mean, transportation is a very, very small part of the world's energy budget. How are we going to heat these steel mills? You know, now we're using coal. I mean, there's no across the street from coal. I mean, we have to find another green energy carrier.
Well, Steve, let me ask you a real quick question. Okay,
sure.
I don't know a lot about renewable energy. I know that renewable energy kind of failed during this last brouhaha down in Texas, okay?
Right.
And what I'm curious about is I have read numerous books about climate change. And the latest one that I read in my book club basically said climate change is bunk. It's not happening. How do you feel about that?
You know, I've always been skeptical. Look,
yeah,
you know, when you put together one of these incredibly complex models, trying to predict what's going to happen 30 or 40 years or 50 years from now, it's the chances of it being right are close to zero. But on the other hand, so climate change as it's portrayed right now, 1.5 degrees, and you know, the specifics and the exactness of it, color me extremely skeptical about that. But on the
you've indicated so far in our discussion today that you're very concerned about it.
I'm not necessarily, yes, I am concerned about it, you know, in the short term. I'm not necessarily concerned about all the forecasts and the specificity of what they're saying about it. But, you know, common sense, I mean, and basically, you know, as far as I'm concerned, common sense is a lot more important than all this science, okay?
Okay.
I mean, if I hear the phrase one more time, we have to pay attention to the science. We have to listen to the science, you know, President Biden continues to say and others continue to say. I think I'm going to... I want to say something, you know, not vulgar, but I think I'm going to get very nauseous. I mean, I just can't stand hearing it. It just grates the hell out of me. But on the other hand, you know, common sense says that if you're putting CO2, more and more of it, into the atmosphere, if you look at the trends in temperature, I mean, you're having some effect. You don't know exactly what that effect is going to be. You don't know how long it's going to last.
Right.
But, you know, you have to be silly not to admit that there's some effect from that. And it does create that, you know, the common sense version of it is it creates global warming. Does it create it to the point that it's going to be an existential threat? No one knows that. I mean, you know, the good Lord knows that. But none of us on Earth know whether that's a threat to the planet. I mean, come on, we just don't know. But we do know that it is creating differences in conditions. Temperatures are getting warmer. I don't think anyone disputes that. And, and no one disputes the fact that CO2 makes sense to call CO2 a cause. Mm-hmm. It's a greenhouse effect. So, I mean, how serious is it going to be? I have no idea. Is it going to go away in the next 10 years? Maybe. But right now we're faced with it. And right now, if you extend the current trends, you could have some trouble. But the point is, I don't care whether how real it is. What I do care about is that when you go toward, the mid part of this century, as you go forward, you're going to have major problems because of shortages of fossil fuels. This is, again, much more compelling sense than CO2 and global warming. There's only so much fossil fuels around. I mean, in order to generate shale, Al, in this country, we wasted $1.5 trillion and maybe more. This is an industry we created because we wanted, to create a business, and we wanted to, you know, not be so dependent on the Middle East in oil. But in the meantime, basically, we created an industry that turns out to be a tremendous boondoggle. I mean, basically, shale between 2011 and 2021, where we are today, over the past decade, has probably lost on a cash basis well over $1 trillion. You count all the opportunity losses associated with that, and you get into figures that are, you know, maybe $2 trillion. I mean, we can't afford to do that. It makes no sense. I mean, the point is that, you know, peak oil was probably a terrible word to use because we're never at peak oil. I mean, we'll never be at peak oil. It'll never make sense from a supply point of view to say we're at peak oil.
Okay, then why are you concerned about it right now, Steve?
Because we can't afford the oil that's still in the ground. That's the point. It's not affordable, and it's going to become ever less affordable. And it's going to become ever less affordable in the context of copper becoming a scarce commodity. There are basic scarcities associated with what's in the ground. That's common sense, isn't it? I mean, we're not creating more copper.
Of course it is, but it strikes me that in the short term anyway, or let's be a little more accurate, let's say in the midterm, that provides one hell of an opportunity for investors in fossil fuels, i.e. oil.
Yeah, well, I would say not so much oil, because oil's become just too expensive. And I think that, yeah, I think it probably could go up from here. I really do. And I actually believe all commodities will go up.
Okay, I know
that. I think
that.
This is a commodity cycle that, you know, it's a once-in-a-lifetime thing. We're in the midst of a transition. And there's it basically the necessity, and I've argued this for a long time. I mean, the necessity for transitioning to renewable energies is not so much because, you know, we want to be green. I don't want to be green necessarily. I just want to leave a world to my kids that is self-sustaining. And if you don't get on your horse right now and start doing this, you're going to face a major existential crisis, not necessarily because of climate change, but just because you won't have affordable fossil fuel. To get fossil fuel, you need copper, and we're already going to run short on copper. I mean, Freelander, who was one of the top commodity investors in the world, just the other day said, how are we going to get all this copper? The grades are going down, and as grades go down, you need more and more energy to produce copper, and you're going to need many times more copper than you thought you were because of electric vehicles. They consume a lot of copper. They're wonderful cars, and it's, I think, good that we're, you know, transforming into electric vehicles, not because they don't use fossil fuels, but because they're, you know, it makes sense to do this. They're better cars. You know, it's all the sense in the world. They're 100% efficient as opposed to 30% efficient.
Yeah.
When you're running a car on gasoline, you're using 70% of your energy. When you run it on electricity, you're using all your energy. So it makes a lot of sense for a lot of reasons. But on the other hand, you know, there are definite, you know, problems. And the problems are always come back to commodity scarcities. And when you consider, Al, the need to, you know, develop the developing world, you've got 85% of this world that is not developed, that does not have a decent standard of living. And by a decent standard of living, I mean what we, well, most Americans, I mean, not, you know, thanks to the last 50 years, fewer as a percentage, but, you know, enjoy, you know, a couple of meals a day that are fairly decent, you know, nice living shelter, nice living quarters, et cetera. I mean, you know, the developing world wants a shot at that too.
Hey,
and
Steve,
you know,
Steve,
they deserve
Steve,
it, frankly.
Steve, hang on. I just want to take about a 30-second break here, by the way, and I'm going to put an ad in here, and I just want to take a 30-second break, and then I want to get back into this, okay?
Sure.
If you guys want to read a really, really interesting newsletter, take a look, a quick look at what Steve writes about on a regular basis. Steve is a very, very interesting man. He's got some great ideas, and that's one of the reasons we have him as much as we do on the show. If you want to get a sample of his newsletter, just let me know on the blog, and I'll contact him, and we'll see what we can do. A lot of money to be made with Stephen, Dr. Stephen Leib. Hang on just a second. I'm going to be right back with Dr. Leib. Welcome back, chatting with Stephen Leib again right now. Stephen, I'm a little bit confused, and I have to say the reason I'm confused is I didn't realize how adamant you are about renewable energy. I'd like you to elaborate on that a little bit, if you would, please. Why,
well,
and give me a time frame. And is this a good opportunity to invest in some type of renewable energy?
It is, and I think it's basically probably the best investment you can make, because the world is being driven there. I mean, pulled into that area because of these scarcities that I'm talking about. And it's not just scarcity in fossil fuels. There's scarcities, I mean, in things like copper. I mean, that's amazing to me. I mean, when we think of things that are scarce, we think of things like rare earths. Well, gold is scarce. Silver is a pretty scarce commodity. But copper, the all-purpose commodity, which is used in everything from wiring to construction to, you know, various industrial applications. I mean, that's becoming scarcer. Over the past 20 years, the reserves of copper, you know, have dropped despite the high copper prices. Copper prices, incidentally, if you had bought copper at the beginning of last century, and that's all you had just copper buried in your backyard, and you took it out today and you went to cash it in, you would have probably made more money than if you put your money in the S&P 500 and, you know, with dividends reinvested. Copper's
yeah.
done very, very well. But, you know, and that means that prices for copper, that's because the only way you make money on copper if you buy it is if prices go up. Prices have gone up a lot for copper. I mean, fivefold. I don't know what the exact percentage is, but again, it's greater than the S&P 500. And typically, Al, when prices go up for a commodity, so do reserves, because you can afford to get more out of it. You can afford to drill for more, and it will be profitable. But what happened in this past century is that reserves did go up. There's no doubt, but they did not go up nearly as much as they should have. I mean, the ratio of production to reserves, which is how much you can produce relative to how much you have in the ground, that ratio went down. That's a bad sign, because it means as production continues to rise, you're going to need lower and lower grades of copper in order to satisfy that production. And, you could be headed for a train wreck just talking about copper if the discussion stopped right there. I mean, the point is we need
what do you mean,
a lot.
Steve, what do you mean when you say a train wreck? Can you elaborate on that, please?
Mm-hmm. What happens if you can't afford copper? If half your resources in the world have to go to producing copper, what's left when it comes to food and everything else? That's what I mean. I mean, you can. I mean, people in the developed world, Al, where we live, they've gotten used to looking at a computer. You know, I have four screens in front of me. I have a powerful computer. And, you know, I'm not thinking about commodities. They're not a part of my everyday life, even though in the background, this computer is not, you know, it's not like the ones that mine Bitcoin, but it does consume energy. And technology, if you look at all of technology, and, you know, the scientists will tell you, the scientists that you can trust that have done, you know, the numbers, I've read the studies. Basically, technology consumes massive amounts of electricity, which is the problem with Bitcoin, incidentally. I mean, that's an accident, not even an accident. That could be the end of a lot, but that's another story. The point is, all of technology may today consume 20% of the world's electricity. That's a lot of electricity that we use, running our computers, and that could be an understatement. So, I mean, the point is, commodities are there. If you run out of copper, where are you going to get the wires for grids that supply our electricity? Everything shuts down. That's the point. That's why I'm worried about copper. That's why I'm worried about nickel. That's why I'm worried about all things that are hard and finite, that are in the ground. Basically, I think that we're, you know, running into a real existential problem. I mean, I would call the period right now as being the most critical period mankind may have ever faced. I mean, I can't go back and tell you the effects of different ice ages, etc., on mankind. It was a totally different thing. But certainly in modern times, maybe starting this millennia, starting at zero, the first AD, this is probably the biggest crisis that mankind has faced, where we are to now,
and you're
where
talking, we are right and now. And you're talking specifically about copper right now.
I'd say copper is an example. I'm not just talking about copper, though. I'm talking about foods, fertilizers. Where are you going to get the fertilizers? I mean, you need a substitute for fossil fuels. Today we get fertilizers from fossil fuels. People have a conception in our country right now that oil and natural gas and coal, you know, they allow us to, they're important for driving cars, they're important for heating homes. I mean, you know, that's their major use, if you ask most people, man on the street. Well, okay, we need oil so we can, you know, drive our cars, so we can heat our homes. But worldwide, we need oil so that we can make fertilizer. we can make a whole bunch of other chemicals so that we can heat fossil fuel, coal in particular, so that we can heat steel furnaces and make steel. I mean, there's a lot of uses for these things that we're going to have to replace, or else we won't have a civilization.
How would
it's
you do
that
as an investment? What would you do? Invest in the commodity or invest in the public companies?
Both. I mean, I would take whatever I thought was, you know, cheaper and I'm doing an article right now on hydrogen. And because that's the least developed of all the renewable econo of all of the critical renewable energies that we will need in the next 30, 40 years. We've got to start right now, today, in developing hydrogen. And this country is unfortunately way behind. I mean, when I say way behind, not maybe that's an exaggeration, but it's really not on our radar as much as it should be. And you know, it really worries me because now it's not, you know, I mean, in a sense, I feel kind of relieved because I've been, you know, saying China's way ahead of us, but it's no longer just China that's ahead of us. Europe is way ahead of us in hydrogen, way ahead. And in fact, the race for, you know, for dominating in hydrogen, is between Europe and China. And you know what? They're cooperating with one another. If Europe and China can cooperate with one another, with each other, we should be able to cooperate too. I mean, the three major economic forces in this world, China, Europe, and the U.S., if they were all cooperating, I wouldn't be so worried. But, you know, it seems here we're more interested in fighting. I mean, it makes no sense.
No.
I mean, you know, especially when, you know, our closest allies, presumably Europe, are cooperating with China because they see it as an existential problem, which it is. It's not just a problem for United States or China. It's a problem for this entire planet. And as a planet, we've got to come together on a certain level. It doesn't mean that we have to accept anybody's form of government, another form of no. That's out. We don't have to do that. If Europe can cooperate with China, if Israel can, you know, to some extent cooperate with Saudi Arabia, which they're doing a little bit more of, we could certainly find ways of cooperating with countries that we totally don't agree with, that we think are totally wrong. But in certain areas, we're all on the same planet.
Steve, and, of course, we're all on the same planet. I'll tell you what I'd like to do. I'd like to take a break here. I kind of need to. We've been going for 21 minutes. We already have one commercial break for your newsletter. I just want to say one thing. I cannot stress how important Dr. Leib's newsletter is. If you want a copy just to check it out, let me know through the blog, and I will get it to you for sure through Stephen. Steve, got a question for you. What I would like to do is I would like to devote half the weekend radio show to this particular topic. Now, we only have, if we do half the show, that gives us, in effect, about 20 minutes. I'd like you to be able to give a really good summary for our radio listeners, if you would. I think I've never seen an investment advisor as enthusiastic about a particular investment topic right now as I'm hearing from you regarding renewals. Ladies and gentlemen, I will be recording the weekend show with Dr. Leib on Friday, 1 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. I will then, obviously, you'll be able to listen to that. I'm sure that Dr. Leib will have a very, very compelling argument. In the meantime, a common sense argument that I think you really ought to take a listen to. I really believe there is some opportunity here. You may disagree, you may agree, but let's talk about it this weekend. Dr. Stephen Leib, thank you so much, sir.
Thanks, Al. It was a pleasure being with you.